Dave Strider and the Hollowed Heart. From The Gods Have Horns by Saltisi Day and Shadow Wasserson. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based upon the works of Andrew Hussey. One. Knight of Wands, Ace of Pentacles. Your name is Dave Strider, and you are 6 years old. Old enough to realize what is sitting next to you, but too young to know that you should be afraid. There is a goddess sitting next to you. You think that you even know who she is. You've seen her on a lot of things, idols, icons, even playing cards, the Rogue of Heart. She's wearing a long magenta coat with images emblazoned over the chest, a spade, a heart, a club, a diamond. But what seals the deal is the sigil of her aspect that she wears around her neck, a heart divided in two, one side hollowed out. You've seen that symbol plenty of times before. Her claws are long and sharp, but she takes care not to hurt you as she rests her hand over one of yours. "You should be worried right now," she says helpfully, "but you're too young to take the hint." She seems to realize this. Of course, if you could be scared easily, then maybe you wouldn't be sitting on the edge of a roof.
"I like sitting here. It's a little cooler, the night air up here, but it feels nice. You're used to it."
"What would your bro say?"
It's not a surprise that she knows about your bro. Old enough to expect a goddess to know everything, too young to realize that doesn't mean she would care.
"I want to see him when he comes home."
You kick your legs back and forth over the edge as you say this. She smirks.
"He won't be home for 3 hours. A beat. Want to meet a friend of mine?"
"Bro told me not to talk to people who say things like that."
"Even living gods?"
You think about this for a moment.
"He didn't say."
"Come on, it'll be fun. Besides," she adds, "your bro has never gone on an adventure with a goddess, has he?"
That cinches it. You know for a fact that bro hasn't done anything like that. He wouldn't have failed to mention it as yet another thing for you to live up to. And even at 6 years old, there's a part of you that wants to best him, to prove yourself worthy of his attention, or just to beat him. You don't know. But the result's the same. Wrapping you up in her arms, she leaps off the roof. For a moment, you really are afraid, but then her wings pop out from beneath her coat like green butterfly wings, and you flutter safely to the ground. Your bro's parkour skills are one thing, but that was a whole other level of cool. The Rogue of Heart takes you by the hand and leads you to a hospital. People notice her. They notice her gray face, her horns, the sigil swaying over her chest. And the crowd gives way, like a river being sliced in two. No one puts up a fight when you go into one of the rooms. You're not really allowed in here, you're not a doctor, but she's a goddess. The two of you take seats in a room with a sleeping, wrinkly old man and a bunch of machines that keep making beep-boop noises. You wonder if you're waiting for him to wake up, but your divine companion shushes you when you try to speak up. And then, all of a sudden, you are no longer alone. You immediately recognize her as another goddess, although you are not so quick to figure out which one. She is wearing deep red robes with the sigil of a gear drawn upon them. Her curling horns seem to pour out of her hood. You think at first that she has only whites for her eyes, but then you realize that you are looking at her eyelids. She is wearing face paint in white and black. White over her eyelids and her face, black rings around her eyes and the lines across her lips. As if somebody had tried to slash her cheeks open with a paintbrush. It seems as though a spade was painted across her nose, but then you realize that the image on her face is a skull. And the spade is supposed to look like the empty pit where the nose should be. "What is this one doing here?" she asks, burgundy flashing in your mind, and for the first time you are afraid. Not because of her words, but how she is saying them. She is speaking with the tinge. And for the first time in your short life, you understand what it means to come face to face with divinity. I do not have the time.
Don't give me that, you silly,
your companion says cheerfully.
You have time for everyone. Anyway, we made an appointment.
The other goddess does not open her eyes. With myself, I presume? Then who is your friend?
Dave Strider. He was right where you said he would be, and already as fun as a litter of kittens.
Most people don't meet goddesses like this, not even here on Earth. They're more like celebrities making appearances at holidays and other events. Most people just admire them from a distance, not make friends with them. But you're Dave Strider, and that's just how things go for you. And at 6 years old, you're a little too young to question why. 2. T and Melody. Your name is Dave Strider, and you are 9 years old. You are getting wiser about the world. You learn that the Maid of Time is the goddess that everyone will meet at least once. She is present for every death, just like the Book of the Zodiac says. She does not wish that anyone should die alone, and so she comes and sits with them in their final frozen moments between time. There are many who dream to serve her well enough that she will fulfill a last request, or heal the pain of dying with regrets. Everyone will meet her at least once, but few people will meet her twice. Fewer still will meet her at 6 years old, and then be invited to weekly teas at the hospital, with her and another goddess. The living gods have names, not just titles. Some people know them, fewer speak them. The names are wrapped up in taboo and mystery, sounds too holy for the unwashed and profane to utter them. Fear and awe keep the names secret, not any act on the part of the gods. But then they don't care enough to divulge their names in most cases anyway. Where the names are remembered, there is usually disagreement over who they belong to. But you're different.
I've been called the Queen of the Bow since before the foundations of this city were laid,
the rogue told you once over tea with the goddesses.
The leader of hosts, the opener of the womb, she who begets all, and goddess of goddesses.
There was a steady beat as she said it, a ba-dum-ba-dum to her words that seemed to mimic the pulsing of your heart. But what's your name?
Nepeta, and the Mopi Cat is Aradia.
The words were like honey, with an almost iambic beat to them. The soothing herb, Nepeta of heaven and earth, who begets all, who forgives sins. You find yourself repeating the words to yourself in the dark, not knowing why, but only that it satisfied some part of your soul. Something that wasn't entirely woken up yet. A chant, a rhythm. Like you're trading whispered rap lyrics with spirits that never respond. A mantra, almost. You don't really know how Bro is taking it. He seems disturbed and has become more so after you mentioned that you were also seeing Aradia. He met Nepeta once, briefly, and now by mutual unspoken arrangement you have made sure that the two never see each other again. You aren't sure why he's so scared. He's the reason that you recognized her at all. There's a little idol of her sitting near the household shrine for Uncle Crab, draped with fancy sigil necklaces that he cleans every legende. But when she up and comes into the house, he doesn't want anything to do with her. These days he more often prays to the night for protection. You know he hasn't always been this distant with gods. There's little Cal, for one thing, propped up in the kitchen when Bro isn't using him, and he came straight from the Dark Carnival. Has the sigil of rage on his inside lining and everything. Bro probably got him there, though he doesn't talk about it. You wish he'd tell you about the carnival. It was probably hella cool. But whenever you ask, he just shuts up. Bro's older. You will someday understand, old enough to recognize gods for what they are, and old enough to be cautious of divinity. He prefers his goddesses at a comfortable distance, somewhere on the other side of the world or the galaxy, not sitting in his living room, playing board games. So instead, you play them at the hospital.
Nepeta tries to explain it to you one day as the two of you sit in a hospital waiting room one night, waiting for the third member of your merry band.
He doesn't want to tell you, though. He knows that there isn't any point to it.
She smiles, revealing the sharpest teeth you've ever seen.
Whom the gods choose, we have chosen.
For what?
To be our company.
You shrug, thinking to yourself that if the gods want somebody to play Monopoly with, then maybe they should just ask. You are still not catching on, even when she tries to make it clear as day.
People have written hymns to me. They've praised me and they've cursed me. We don't leave the world alone.
You would have to be blind not to notice that people try to clear out around her. All except for the occasional apparent maniac who can't get enough of being around her. Some of the staff have to stay in the waiting room, though, and there are a few people whose conditions are apparently serious enough that they can't wait for a night that the Lady of the Lands isn't there.
I am the Rogue of Heart. I can make them want who I want them to, if I want. Do you see the nurse over there at the desk?
She whispers into your ear.
All I have to do is will it. And she'll walk past us and drag that man with the cast there into a closet. You can forget about her wife. She sure will.
That could mess some people up, so, thanks for not doing that.
I'm Lady Heartbreak, and I leave a trail of hearts behind me where I walk. I'm like a spiritual surgeon, making people trade hearts like playing cards. Not because I'm intending it, but because I am. I exist.
Meow.
I am she who sends messages of desire,
she says.
Meow.
I'm only holding it in because I don't want to make a scene. But that's all.
You shudder at the tinge in her voice, and then you try to pretend that it never happened. How would Bro handle this? What would he say? Yeah, okay, so I've got a friend like a walk-in leaking nuclear reactor of emotions, but that's cool. And I'm just too stone cold to fall for your wiles, is that it? All these losers are tripping all over themselves, but your best bro here just wants to roll the dice and move his dog 5 spaces and pay the rent on Boardwalk.
Nepeta laughs. You couldn't resist me if you tried.
Prove it. She grins.
Maybe when you're older, kid.
And then Aradia comes, and you play Chinese checkers and drink tea in the space between 10504 and 10505. Later you do catch on. Why people are afraid of divinity. But you're still so used to being around them, it's easy for you to understand why others might be worried. But not why you should be. 3. Love. Death. Your name is Dave Strider, and you are 13 years old. This is the day that you're going to remember more than any other. Even if you live forever, this day will ring out clearly for millions of years to come. You spend a lot of time at hospitals, that's where your friends are, and maybe you're a little weird having gods for friends and hanging around the dying. But between the sword-fighting lessons and the smuppets, you've never exactly been a normal kid. The doctors barely pay you any heed as you walk through the halls this time. They're used to you, and their only prayer is that your friends don't scare away anyone that needs immediate attention. Some people just plain never go to this hospital. They add another 30 minutes to their trip just so they don't have to go here. And other people, of course, slit their wrists or guzzle pills in the hopes that the forgiver of sins will pass them on the way. You've seen it happen. You've seen it all. People who have hurt themselves and people in the act of hurting themselves. People who have gotten what they wanted or what they thought they wanted. As their hearts get swapped out and replaced and interchanged like so many puzzle pieces. Nepeta does it when she's asked, and she does it when she's bored. She says that it's like breathing, that it's easier to let it happen than to hold it all in. And you wonder how that must feel. But you aren't here for games today. This is business, as sure as the gods live. Your bro has never been too chill with the gods being all up and in your business like they are, but you're going to make it up to him. All that worry that he's suffered on your account is going to be paid back with interest. All you have to do is sit by his bedside and wait. Nepeta isn't there. You didn't tell her, and As bad as it feels to acknowledge it, she only cares about Bro because you do. She only listens to what you have to say about him because you're saying it. She won't find out about any of this until after you've told her, and you think that you'd like to be alone. At least until she appears. She'll stop for you. She has to. You've done the calculations. Garden Gnostic on the SBHJ forum helped you out. You got some basic figures, some estimates that Gigi got from some mysterious unnamed source, and then you crunched the numbers. If Aradia visits every single intelligent being in the universe, which is sort of the thing that she does, then she could be 100 trillion years old before she finished it. 100 trillion years of personal history. When, in all that time, did she meet you? When did she become your friend? And when is she coming to talk with Bro? She's always known who you were when you come to the hospital with Nepeta. You want to take that as a good sign that she has some sort of system to this thing and doesn't just bounce around like she's the timey-wimey ball of a cosmic pinball machine. You spend your time waiting for her to arrive, hoping that your guesses are right, and hoping that she'll care enough to have a word with you. Bro doesn't wake up. They're not sure when he will, if he will. The clock turns round and round forever, endlessly tracking the minutes and hours, and you wonder if this is why she's called the Clockwork Witch, or maybe there's some other reason why. Eventually you get impatient. You wonder if maybe she visited him some other time. Maybe your bro won't ever wake up and she grabbed him before the truck hit. But you won't let him just die like this, some shitty mundane death, 1 out of 33 million. Aradia Megiddo! Aradia Megiddo! You nearly shout the name. She can't help but hear you. Wherever she is, she's hearing you. She knows you're calling. Aradia Megiddo! You'll keep it up for as long as you need to. And if he dies, then you'll fucking send her back and change the way things went. Aradia Megiddo! She comes like a sinking gale. You dare to think you feel her before you see her. But then there she is. And the whole world is silent. The beeping machines have quieted and frozen. And even your bro has been left out of this moment between moments. There was an accident, you begin. But then you quiet down as she lifts a hand. She does not look in your direction, but at your bro. I know why you called me, she says in burgundy tinge. I know what he is to you. Then you'll save him, you say. But she shakes her head. Not sadly, either. Her eyes still appear white to you, painted over on the eyelids and shut tight. But we're friends, Aradia. I thought we were friends. You don't understand. She can freeze time. She can traverse its lanes like some kind of sleek, shiny time convertible, cruising without crashing and crushing, splattering blood on the pavement and stop. Dave, focus. Anyway, she can bring people through time. When she is especially gracious, she can bring the dying to their loved ones, to offer last goodbyes or see the children they died too young to be remembered by. And somewhere out there in the millions and billions of years that the universe will keep turning, they can fix him. Compared to that, she wouldn't even have to bring him very far. And all that she gives you? All that she says, as if it's any kind of excuse, is everything comes to an end. Aradia vanishes, and in her wake comes the wail of the machine. The doctors rush in, but they know as well as you that he's dead. She already did it. She waited with him as the rest of the world was frozen. She had her words with him, answered his questions, and expressed her hollow condolences, and then he died. And she didn't let you say goodbye. You hate her so much that it hurts. 4. Roguish Heart, Maiden Time. Your name is Dave Strider, and you are 15 years old. You don't see Aradia anymore. Maybe the goddess mentioned something to Nepeta, because she never brought you to the hospital again after what happened to your bro. But at night you dream of her. Weird dreams that make you shiver, dreams of dark curls and painted lips and slender fingers caressing your chest, dreams of a low, musical voice like the tinkling of bells, dreams of eyes the color of dried blood. You wake in a sweat and forget them, only to have them creep back into consciousness during the day, slipping through the deep canals of your brain like slick black oil. You stopped going to school almost immediately, but the truancy bot never broke down your door. Didn't have a job for a long time either, but they didn't kick you out of your apartment. And a thousand kinds of tea, and she was about to bring in another cabinet before you told her to cut it out. Sometimes weeks go by, and you barely see her at all. You can understand that. It isn't her fault. She has galaxies and galaxies to maintain, and she isn't like Aradia. She can't be in two places at once. But you miss her so much. And sometimes you think that she's the only one who understands. And the other gods, they do scare you. John is too wrapped up in his own problems. Rose isn't close to anyone, really. You'd have thought Jade would be able to empathize, but maybe she's just too zen to question the gods, never mind about her grandpa and why they didn't save him, and maybe she knows something you don't. But it hurts too much, and if understanding means you don't care anymore, then you don't want to understand. You don't know what you would do without Nepeta. Maybe the other gods can be scary, but she's your oldest friend. The apartment still gets managed by Skyanet, a front company that handles work for the mage and some of the other gods. For obvious reasons, the gods have a more than passing interest in you and your upcoming apotheosis, and they want to make sure to keep your head above the water. You wouldn't have to pay for food either, but your shitty comics and shittier raps are enough to make you a little money, and you want to feel at least a bit like you can manage on your own. It's 2 o'clock a.m., and the television has been running forever now, and your eyes are starting to glaze over. You should really think about getting to bed. When you hear somebody move in the apartment. You don't know how they got in or why you didn't hear them playing with the locks, but your hand goes to your sword all the same. Those are questions you can figure out later. When you turn around, the sword drops from your hands. All your questions, too.
Bro!
Aradia is there, too, and you try to ignore her. You can force answers out of her some other time, even if you have to stand next to every dying body in the city until she deigns to talk with you. Right now, Bro's here. He's wearing the same clothes he did the day he was hit. But he hasn't been hit, so he will be hit. So he's still going to die. But just for a moment, that truth is lost in the painful joy that he's here. He's actually here. Ignoring his protestations that he's fine, he's not hurt, you lead your bro to the couch so that he can sit down and get some distance from the goddess. But she still follows you, a silent red shadow. She doesn't matter. How much time do you have? Goodbye, you say, stumbling over the words, in advance, in case she doesn't give us any warning. Your bro seems tired, distant. But he wants to see what you've been up to, so you bring over your comics and talk about your music. You try to shoot the shit like you used to, but it's like a heavy, bloody cloud is hovering between you. 2 years thick. 2 years. He's been in the grave. Meanwhile, Aradia is there, too. She's there. She doesn't matter, but she's there, burning just out of sight. Like a hot, black scar across what should be a moment between just you and Bro. You feel so tense, painfully aware of every sound she makes. She shifts her weight, takes a few steps, and runs her hand along your turntables, and you want to grab her wrist to shove her away from your records, want to know what her fingers would feel like against yours. God's day, focus. Bro's here. You brew him up a pot of tea, this new kind that Nepeta introduced you to the other month. But you don't mention her specifically. Neither of you bring up the gods or anybody else for that matter. You try not to think about how this is only a brief reprieve. You try not to glance too obviously in Aradia's direction. Thank the gods for your shades. Nice mirrored ones, a gift from John. Aradia is moving, and the sound of her approaching footfalls makes you shiver. When she lays a hand on your shoulder, you freeze. Her touch is warm. For a moment, you can't see, you can't think. Too soon, her hand leaves, and she hasn't said a word, but you know what she means. It's time. It's fucking time, and no, you're not having this. He's going to stay, even if it breaks time itself, and... You turn around to face her to tell her that, but she's gone. Bro is gone. The apartment is as empty as a gutted Jack Noir lantern. She just killed him. She could have saved him so easily to let him stay here in the future with you, but instead she brought him back in time to the accident and left him there. For the car to hit him a second or a minute later and he's dead, and she did it to him. You've been so angry so long at the driver, at the car, at the fucking manufacturer. But it's her. It's her fault. When Nepeta comes over the next morning, she finds you on your knees like a good little disciple, repeating Aradia Megiddo's name every minute to make sure that she hears every foul word that spills from your lips. And even though you won't take a second from issuing curses to acknowledge her presence, she takes you in her arms anyway. She waits there like that until you finally run out of words, your throat almost too raw for you to speak anymore.
Nepeta. Am I a bad person?
You croak.
Is it normal to hate somebody this much?
Shoosh, she whispers. Shoosh.
I just hate her, and I just hate her.
You are shaking.
Like
you want to kill her?
No, I want to hurt her. Over and over and... make her feel like I do.
You aren't even sure what you're trying to say. You can't say what you want. You can't say you want to grab her, tear her apart, squeeze her neck, make her beg. The expression on Nepeta's face is unreadable. And the only thing that you can think about is how disappointed she must be in you right now. You bury your face in her shirt to hide from her. To hide from the world, and especially your own heart.
Shoosh, Dave. Shoosh.
It's hard hating somebody this much. It's hard, and nobody understands. Least of all yourself. 5. A Black Cat Love Song. Your name is Dave Strider, and you are 16 years old. And you're sitting on a rooftop with a computer in your lap. Today is the day the world ends. You didn't think that you would have any visitors, but here she is, Nepeta Lejeune.
What's with the visit? You ask. I would have expected the mage to see me off, if anyone. There's nothing more anyone can do, right?
She doesn't respond immediately.
This was where we met for the first time. Do you remember?
She takes a seat beside you as you stare at your laptop and wonder if you should do it. Install game. Yes, no.
Nothing changes. It's all inevitable. You know that. She knows that. The rest of the world is going to find out pretty soon. But there are doomed timelines. You could take your laptop and throw it off the roof and...
There would still be the Alpha Dave, and he'd press the button and ensure your collective existences, but it wouldn't be you. Stable time loops don't do shit for stealing your agency away now that you think of it, and that sucks. You wish that you didn't still have a choice. Your hand hovers over the button.
I brought tea,
Nepeta says, and you're grateful for the distraction. Your hand goes from the laptop to the little cup in her hand. You bring it up to your mouth and take a moment just to smell it. Good old righteous southern sweet tea, sugared while it was hot, you think. And you're not going to wonder how it manages to be ice cold or how Nepeta got it up here in the first place when all she has to carry the cups are those tiny pockets running up and down her coat. It's a divine mystery, that's what it is.
When you were younger, you just liked the tea. Loose-leafed sencha and nutty kukicha from Japan. Zavarka from Russia. Black tea, oolong tea, even visits to India for authentic right-on-the-street chaiwala. You are the Michael Jordan of tea, the Generalissimo of Genmaicha, the motherfucking Earl of Grey, and you are going to do an acrobatic pirouette off the handle if you can't find any in the medium. It wasn't until you were older that you realized what this was. A religious sacrament, a rite of making atonement with the motherfucking goddess of goddesses herself. Praise her name, maybe even without a complete sense of irony.
It's okay to be scared,
she says as you take a drink. I'm not scared. You lean against her and tell yourself that it's for totally ironic purposes. Some gesture of nonchalance or something like that. You don't even know. It's just a nice feeling. And you're going to leave it at that. Thank you for being there for me.
No problem. It was a privilege just to be your friend, you know? Just to be around you and make the magic happen.
You laugh. Give me some credit, Nepeta. I'd be spinning hella magic beats whether you were around or not. Nepeta snakes an arm around your shoulder.
I was talking about your little black crush on Aradia. There aren't many humans that can feel really caliginous for someone. It's too bad. I was hoping I could get you to make a move before you hit 20. But the game got in the way, you know?
What? You try to move away from her, but one of her arms is around you tight and you can't get very far. Are you kidding me? You did that to me? To this day, you still dream of Aradia every night, waking with a gasp and tingling all the way down and hating her and hating yourself and wanting her. Nepeta smiles.
Aradia's the one who suggested it. She's lonely, you know, with just herself for company. I just gave you a little push over the edge from platonic hate to pitch, so you could feel it to your full potential.
You can't breathe. This was just a game to you.
If we can call Scrub a game, then I guess that this was too. It was fun anyway, even if I couldn't get you together in time.
You struggle in her arms, but she's strong, too strong, and she doesn't let go. I can't believe it. You introduced me to Aradia just so that you could watch me fall apart over her? Do you have any idea how many nights? Nepeta purrs.
Yes. Not a bad job, right? All things considered. Especially since it'd be so much easier to swap your heart if you already felt that way about someone else, or if someone else felt that way about Aradia. It's not that she doesn't have admirers, but do you have any idea how very few people are jockeying to be her rival? So I thought, why not give my friend a little gift?
How could she? How could she, after all this time, being your friend, supporting you, caring about you, she was just, what, grooming you? No, you won't take it. She can't control you. She's the only one who wouldn't. You start to say. But you're silenced when her mouth presses up against yours. The kiss only lasts for a second.
Oh, Dave. Caligonus for two women at once? You really are the talented one.
Nepeta grins, first playfully. Then with a dawning, delighted realization.
Oh, of course. Aradia, you are a clever kitten.
You don't understand. You gape at Nepeta. Your heart pounds, your face burns. The goddess's smile turns predatory.
Well, maybe I'd like to get just one more taste of that before I go, she says.
She kisses you again, and that's when you lose it. You bite down on her tongue, she moans. You scratch your nails across her back, she whimpers and starts to slip a hand down your pants, and gods help you, you don't know what's driving you more, if you want to hurt her, or if you're just that turned on, and gods, oh God. Nepeta draws away from you, grinning. All it does is make you hate her more.
And that's an itch that you're never going to get scratched.
As she says the words, she grabs your hand and your stomach flips, and no, she's doing it, isn't she? She's doing it right now. You hear a click. And you look over to see she's guided your finger to the keyboard.
And if that wasn't enough for you to remember me by, then I don't deserve my godhood.
Install game? Why? You're left staring at the screen, dead to everything else until suddenly you notice that she's pulled herself away from you. She's standing again, dusting off her sleeves. She looks down, and it's only then that you realize that she's standing at the edge of the roof.
Considering what I just did to you, playing you like that, do you think if I died it would be just, or would I wake up?
Pettit, don't, why would you... She smirks.
Give Aradia something to remember me by, won't you?
She sticks her tongue out lasciviously for a moment, and then she spreads her arms out.
Have fun on the other side, kid.
She falls out of sight before you can get to your feet.
For the text of this and other stories by the same authors, visit the AO3 pages of Call Me Saltiside and Shadow_Wasserson. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.